Good morning. Integrity and security are the major factors of all gambling sports, especially racing. Sal Perner is the Commissioner of Racing Integrity here in Victoria. And a pleasure to say hello to and a very good morning to Sal Perner. How are you travelling?
Good, thanks, Brian, and thanks for having me in today. Good time of the year for everybody, I think, involved in the racing industry.
Fabulous time. If I may just give our listeners a description of you. Early 50s, if you remember the TV series Kojak, a dead ringer. In fact, a fine cotton, I'd say. Is that correct?
You're very kind on the age, but yeah, I think we share the same barber, Kojak and I and a few others that are follicularly challenged, as I say.
Doesn't make any difference. Look, first up, let me say this to you, that the perception out there at the moment is that the image of racing has been tarnished. Now, I say this through what we're reading in the paper and what we actually know has happened. We've got two of our leading trainers still fighting charges of cobalt use, and that's been going nearly two years this spring, since I think it was late, just after the spring of 2 years ago, the charges were laid. You've got a jockey who was a champion in his time that threatened the chief steward that saw the jockey disqualified for 2 years, that's fighting to get back on the racetrack. The Smoking Aces race fix accusations from Cranbourne still seem to surface. Can you appreciate that from the general public out there, there's a connotation that racing stinks?
Yeah, and we know that that's the fact, Brian, because every year we do a public survey. We bring in a company that is an expert in that field, and we ask them to ask the public certain questions. This year we asked them whether they had a positive or negative view of racing and whether or not that had been influenced by media. And as you'd expect, the vast number of people, the vast proportion of people said yes. The incidents that you manage, you can add to that the race fixing in Mildura with Harness, the recent episode with the Breeders' Crown at Tabcorp Park at Melton, the Greyhound live baiting, all of those things the public tell us influence the way that they see the industry.
These are the gambling sports, and I was going to touch on the live baiting a little later, which we will, but these are the gambling sports. How much confidence can you give the punter listening now? It's Caulfield Cup Day when this program goes to air. How much confidence can they have?
I think the balance with the negativity and the actual reality with racing is to think about each of those incidents and think of them about, are they systemic or are they isolated? Is it about a particular person? Is it about a particular incident? And I think that gives you some perspective. Racing's a good sport. When you look at the integrity measures, particularly over the last couple of years, it ticks off on a lot of the boxes where we've had risks in the past. And that applies equally to, greyhound racing. A lot of people think greyhound racing stinks. And what I say to them is, come and have a look at what happens from the day, from the moment they arrive at the track to the moment they leave. Thoroughbred racing, the same. There's a lot of changes that have happened over the years, but people's perceptions are based on what they knew or heard about in the past, and they're applying it today. Just think of it, any aspect. Think about when the horse arrives at the track, identification. The first thing that happens is that horse is identified by both its markings through its branding and also by microchipping. Now, that dispels a lot of the substitution type things that we've had in the past. And to today, I still get people that tell me, oh, what about fine cotton? You know, there's an example of where it goes on. Well, you know, that was in the 80s, wasn't even in Victoria. And yet things have been introduced like those two things that stop that. So there's a lot of things in place people don't necessarily know that I think provide a fair and equitable industry.
The stakes are high. The gambling dollar runs into the billions per year, just in this state alone of Victoria. And we'll always, when horses, greyhounds, whatever are racing, there's always someone trying to get an edge. And you'll never rid the sports, those sports, of that, will you?
No, you can't. If you look at this in big picture, we've got an industry that's valued at around about $2.8 billion to the economy, employs about 70,000 people. If you apply those statistics to a company, to an organisation, to another industry, you'll always have people in there that are trying to be greedy or affect an outcome. There's no doubt about that. It doesn't matter whether it's banking or policing or the medical profession or anything else. It's always going to happen. But what we think we've got and what we think we're getting better as is preventing that, deterring that, and then actually detecting that. And our systems and our methods are much better than they've been in the past.
Could we describe you and your department as being the watcher of the watched?
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it. There's still a little, of lack of knowledge about what we do. Some people think that we're connected with Racing Victoria, for example. They think that we're part of the integrity department, and we're not. We're independent. We're independent of government, and we're independent of the racing industry. So we operate without fear or favour, as I call it, and we look at what's in place and how to make that better.
We have in place now a better understanding with VicPol, Victorian Police. Does that apply to the Federal Police too? Can you work a lot closer? Do you share intel?
Yeah, that's been one of our major focus areas since we started in 2010. For lots of reasons, the relationship wasn't strong with law enforcement. It's improved dramatically. We've now got what we call Memorandum of Understanding, or MOUs, with Victoria Police and with both the national agencies, so the Australian Federal Police and the Australian Crime Commission. And we've got exchange of information with all three of those bodies. It's also heartening to have a dedicated sports integrity unit within Victoria Police now. Oh. And as you know, they disbanded the racing squad a number of years ago, so there wasn't really an area that was specialised in sport or in racing in particular. At least now we've got that go-to area.
Was the job for the stewards becoming too difficult? Were they trying to spread them too thin? Because once upon a time, in the years that I grew up with my work, the chief steward and the stewards panel would be the police on the day at the race course, but it extends off the course in so many different areas, and there's an area of integrity at Racing Victoria, but did they need assistance away, just a separate division?
Yeah, it's an amazing profession, I think. And as you rightly say, these are the people that were employed really to enforce the rules, and doing that through being able to read a race on race day. And you look at what they do now with betting analysis, with form analysis, with drug control, with intel gathering, with investigation, with out-of-competition testing, with stable inspections. That's huge. So they've gone from turning up on a race day, looking at a race, working out whether any rules have been broken, and then holding an inquiry, administering some sanctions, to all of these other things. You can't expect one person to do all that. So they need technology and they need the additional resources.
With professionals, and we're seeing it now, once a charge is laid by Racing Victoria stewards, they can then appeal to the RAD board. Once, if that's dismissed, they then have the option to go to the courts outside racing, which is VCAT.
Correct.
Which we see happening at the moment with O'Brien and Kavanagh. Do you watch this closely? Do you have any involvement from now on in?
Yeah, we look at it from the broader perspective, not the case itself necessarily, but from the perspective of what is happening at both the Racing Appeals and Disciplinary Boards, the RAD boards, and at VCAT. Are there any trends? Are there any patterns? Are the appeals occurring because people are angry because of the conviction, or are they appealing because of the severity of the penalty? What's going on there? What sort of cases are getting up there? Because we've got a fairly unique model here. We've got a racing industry body that hears them in the first instance, and then we've got a civil body, VCAT, that hears them as the final appellate body, if you like. So it's a really interesting situation to have, and I think that over the next couple of years will be reviewed and probably changed. So we're watching that.
If you go back many years, and again it was in my time, it was draconian in many ways when you think about it. The VRC stewards would lay a charge and you would then appeal to the VRC committee. Doesn't seem right now.
No, racing's had a really interesting approach to a lot of things. One of the biggest issues that we're faced with is what we consider to be conflicts of interest, where you've got people who are regulating, governing, administering, also making decisions about integrity-related things. And I'm not an advocate of that. I think, and I've had this opinion since I started, that all that integrity space needs to be separated away from the body that runs the race, that runs the event, that does the nominations, does the selections, does the handicapping and all the other associated race day type things. Integrity should be standalone and separated out of the body.
Yeah. You say that model is correct now. Have we got it right now?
We're going that way.
Is there more to come?
Yeah. The minister has signed off on implementing a new model that will occur probably within the next 18 months or so. We'll need changes to legislation. And what you'll see from the race goer perspective is no difference. The stewards will be there. In the background, they'll have an integrity control room. They'll be watching footage. They'll be analysing bets. They'll be doing all the things that they do today. But from a structural perspective, from a governance perspective, they'll belong to a different organisation and a cross-code organisation, so that they can share with Harness and share with Greyhounds. And that's the best possible model.
That's an interesting one. Three codes.
Yeah. If you split down to what they actually do, they all really do the same thing, the people in those integrity roles. Whether it's a dog that's running around a track, a horse with a sulky or a thoroughbred, really doesn't make that much difference from the perspective of the intel, the betting analysis and everything else. We still need stewards who can read a race in each of those codes. That wouldn't change. But the fact that they're working together, understanding what's going on across racing, sharing their knowledge, sharing their skills, sharing their resources, has got to be a good thing.
Yeah. Are we at the situation, does it happen now where, particularly with thoroughbreds, that the vision is coming in from the track at Mowi today or Caulfield today, coming back to a hub where a panel of people are watching every move. Is that correct?
It is. And not only that, it even goes one step further, because the technology with Hawkeye-type technology that we've seen in tennis for years, that's available. And you've also got the ability for these people to be watching and listening to what the stewards are doing when they're having the inquiry and have some input. And that's fantastic. They have another set of eyes that have seen the same things the stewards are seeing, and then asking questions of a jockey, for example, after a race, and being able to contribute to that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's new age, but it had to come, didn't it?
Oh, it did. It did. I mean, we've seen a lot happen in sport. I think from some quarters, sport was seen to be a different thing than anything else that's got really good governance, really good integrity. You know, sport isn't a business. Well, it is. It's a big business, and we're talking about people's livelihoods in some cases, and we're talking about the punter being able to put a bet on and watch a race and know and understand that he's got as much chance as anybody else has got.
We're taking a break. I'm with Sal Perna, the Commissioner of Racing Integrity here in Victoria. We're here for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. My guest this morning on This Is Your Racing Life, Sal Perna, the Commissioner of Racing Integrity here in Victoria. Sal, it's not too long back, it might be 12 months, I'm not too sure, but the chairman of stewards, the chief steward, Terry Bailey, had shots fired through his front door. We've never experienced anything like that in racing in Australia, to my knowledge.
No, we've been fortunate, I guess, in one way of describing it. It was a horrendous act. If it's racing related, and we're still not sure, the police still haven't been able to come to a conclusion about that.
Is it still open?
Yeah, it's still under investigation. But if it is racing related, that's the worst possible thing that you could possibly do, to take someone's occupation and then turn that into a private vendetta or private action against that person. You can't ask for much worse than that.
Where do you sit while this investigation goes on? Are you close to it?
We get told what we can get told by Victoria Police when it's appropriate. I don't buy into their investigations. It's not appropriate for me to stick my nose into their business. And they will tell us when they get to a point where they need some assistance or support or information to help them.
The sharing of information, particularly from VicPol, is it at the level that you require?
It's got a lot better. I still think it could be improved. I would still like to see a racing investigative unit. I'm a bit old-fashioned when it comes to things like that. I think the racing squad had a lot of advantages, particularly the the proactive work. And you'll remember that in years gone by, the racing squad detectives would walk the tracks on race days. Right. They'd occasionally have interstate detectives come down here to see if any of people have noticed.
Colourful characters well. Coming in, the interstate pickpocketers at carnival time.
Exactly, and I'd like to see that. We've gone a step towards that with this sports integrity unit, but they're doing all sports. And as you and I and your listeners know, racing is very complex. It's not just animals running around a track, and you've got to understand the industry. And, you know, we're continually amazed by some of the things that happen in racing, just from our perspective, learning about it every single day. Mm. And we try really hard to understand it.
I grew up in the days of the racecourse detective, and we knew them. They were good fellas, and you'd chat with them, and they'd be sort of... They looked as though they were working undercover, but they had sort of most of the smarties and the crooks sussed out. And you'd see them every now and then just tiptoe them off the track. Bill Kneebone is one that comes to mind. I think he might have been the last of the last.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that we forget about these type of people, these specialist investigators that are within the police, is that they're dealing with people that are involved in crime generally as well. Now, we know that racing attracts people like that. We've had instances of that in the past. And I guess there's something to being a person who's involved in crime that attracts them about racing. They like to bet, they like to gamble, they like to take risks. That's pretty clear.
Sure.
So racing is something that attracts them, just like casinos attract them. And that's why I think if we had an investigative unit that was able to gather the information and the intelligence by being at race day, talking to stewards, doing that proactive side, it would help us again.
Your career spans 43 years of fighting crime and corruption in one capacity or another. Part of the police force, you worked in homicide, is that right?
Yeah, I worked in homicide twice. I found it fascinating to start with, you know, a deceased person and then try to work back. It lends itself to someone who likes attention to detail, has a very inquisitive mind, and likes to put the pieces together in a puzzle to try to work out what happened that would lead to that. And I guess in many respects that's what we do in racing. We try to work out what the issues are, how they came to be, who was responsible, and try to fix that. But it's part of my background that I look back very fondly about.
There's time as in undercover duties. There was time where there was an extradition of the nuclear warrior from Los Angeles. Now, tell me about that.
Yeah, that was a guy called Charles Dixon Jenkins. You may recall he was involved in a number of incidents in Victoria, and at one stage he escaped from jail and he left and went to Los Angeles and needed to be brought back. So there's been some pretty interesting roles back there, but it seems like another lifetime ago now.
You're well decorated. You've been commended on four occasions, awarded the National Medal in 1990, the Police Service Medal in 2014, and twice served as a member of the Homicide Squad, as I mentioned. And you also worked in the commercial world, in security?
Yeah, the corporate world was always of some interest to me in the work that I'd been involved in policing. And I was asked whether I'd like to take that role on and look at, you know, anti-corruption and internal fraud and things that happen in the corporate world. And Australia Post was the first organisation that I worked for, and then Telstra after that. And having that, I guess, opportunity to see another side of crime and corruption, not from the public sector perspective, but from the corporate sectors, very valuable.
I come to your office today and I see three chaps and a secretary, three men, and I've met them before. Are they from the police force?
We've got a couple with law enforcement backgrounds, but that's been complemented by other experiences I've had in government and in private industry. The work that we do here, again, lends itself to people who are strong on compliance, enforcement, intelligence, investigation, and got those skills. So. Yeah.
They knew all about the horses from the moment I walked in. They would have a chat about the form and the Caulfield Cup, etc. So I suppose in their job, they have to be across what's going on around them, particularly with racing, or the three codes.
Yeah, that's a critical part of what we do. We've got what we call a stakeholder familiarisation program, and part of this is spending time with people in the industry. Last Thursday, I think it was, we went out to Living Legends, show them around, have a look at what happens to retired racehorses.
Good to hear.
Talk to Andrew Clark out there. We go to the Greyhound Adoption Program. We get on the back of sulkies. We do everything that we possibly can to understand the industry because, my view is that you can't sit in an office in the CBD and understand the racing industry. You've got to get out there. You've got to talk to people and you've got to find out what the industry's about and how it works.
Part of your structure here is a hotline. I'm sure when the live baiting was happening, it must have the phone would have gone off the hook.
Yeah, it's caused by a number of things. The carnival itself will cause it because it'll prompt people to think of something or to pass something on that they've harboured for a while. And human nature is to keep things to yourself unless you think you can pass that information on. Something will happen with that piece of information and then you do it in a way that it's trusted so that you're not betrayed. The hotline gives people the opportunity to pass on the information. We don't have it in here. It's run by an external party. They dial 1-300-227-225. They get a caller from that company. They give them the information and that's all that happens. It's then passed on to us. So we don't know whether it's a male, a female, a trainer, driver, jockey, someone that's not even involved in the industry. We've got no idea. All we've got is the pure information.
Yeah. You've got a, but it could be vengeful. Someone could be crook on someone and they want to dob them in or give them up, as they say in the racing term. How do you filter that down?
By factual investigation. That's the term that is used. All the whistleblower type hotlines have that. It's probably a little bit like an iceberg or a pyramid. You've got a lot down below that really is just maybe information, maybe someone that's angry, someone trying to make it difficult for someone by passing information. But at the top of it, you've got a little bit of good stuff.
Yeah.
The Damien Oliver bet is a good example of that. That piece of information came from this office. Someone told us about that.
Is that how it was triggered?
Exactly.
Right. That's in 2012.
Correct. Yeah. So it's instances like that that say it's worth having this as a tool, if you like, for people to be able to tell you about things. Mm. The Greyhound live baiting, the line went crazy, and it does when we do race fixing, motion inquiries and other things like that. But it's always there. So if someone has something that may or may not be worth something, they give it to us. And as I said before, to us, a lot of things are like a jigsaw. And every little bit of that puzzle helps because we don't have the board of the jigsaw that tells us what the picture is. It's the pieces that make the picture.
There's a massive corporate bookmaking firm called Betfair where you can lay a horse to lose. You can, put your money down to see that horse lose. How does it sit with you and what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, the thing that fascinated me with the advent of a bidding exchange was that it was probably the first time that we'd ever seen, in Australia at least, the opportunity to, bet on an animal to lose. Because that wasn't part of Australian bidding culture.
Not part of our psyche.
No. And yet now it's so powerful because it creates so many other different variables. What's important to me is that we have a good working relationship with Betfair, which we have, and we have a system that allows us to exchange information if and when is needed. And the beauty with systems like that is that all of that data is recorded indefinitely. So we can access data through Betfair as we can with Tabcorp and other bookmakers, which helps us do our job. That's the critical part.
You'd be looking for trends too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there's trends, there's patterns, but there's also pieces of information where you may have two people who are not normally connected, and all of a sudden the system will tell you that they are connected and you start to ask questions why.
Yeah. We're talking with Sal Perna. He is the Commissioner of Racing Integrity here in Victoria for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Sal, your employment in this role, you've survived three governments, so you must be doing something right.
You could put it that way. I was very conscious that one of the advantages of this role is its independence. and I need to be independent, and that's a very strong strength, because when I make a recommendation or conduct an inquiry, I'm doing that without any influence from government or from racing. I was appointed by the Hulls government, and Rob Hulls was also Attorney General, as you know, at that time, for 2 years in 2010, and I was extended by the Napthine government twice after that for 2 years. And now Labor has reappointed me again for 3 years under Martin Pakula as Minister for Racing, and again Attorney General. So I think it's a sort of a role where you need to get your teeth into, and it takes some time to understand the industry and understand how you can have an effect on it. And it's one that I think is critical to racing, but critical to any sport, to have an independent body that can oversee things and say, that's not right, this needs to be done, or I'm going to have a look at that, or I'm going to conduct an audit, or if you've got complaints that aren't being addressed by the industry, come to me.
Do you find the three codes totally cooperative?
Yeah, they are to certain extents. It's human nature not to be happy with someone sitting over your shoulder. In some cases, asking them to do things that A, they don't want to, or B, is going to cost them in actual financial terms or in time. But I think over the period, they've realised that there's a lot of value in having a person like myself around to be able to bounce ideas off and add value as well. So, for example, one of the things that we do that a lot of people perhaps don't know is we provide training courses for the stewards. Now, that's because I think that the steward's role is really a profession. It's not just a job. Yeah. And the skills are critical. So we run training courses and we bring people in who are experts in their fields to train stewards and integrity people on very basic things in some cases, like how to take notes, how to conduct an interview, how to prepare a statement, those sorts of things, how to communicate, how to be a leader. The sorts of skills that they're not necessarily trained about. If I give you an example, when I went to Warrnambool for the Jumps Carnival very early in the piece, I watched the chairman of stewards on the day, who was running the race meeting, and he went about everything that you would expect. He had his team, they were positioned in the areas of the track that they needed to be. He was ensuring that the swabbing was going on, the breath testing of the jockeys was going on. He was watching the race, reviewing the race, administering penalties for offences, etc., etc. And then on that day, and you'll remember this, we had Bannerstrand that jumped the barrier.
Yeah, I do.
And we also had a hot air balloon that landed on the track. Now, in both those instances, that man, a steward and an acting chairman for the day, had to withdraw from all of that knowledge and skills and experience he had, and all of a sudden become a crisis management leader.
Exactly.
An incident controller.
Yep.
Now, what training did he have in leadership, in pulling...
Because there were people injured when Bannerstrand jumped into the crowd.
And
that's
it was
right.
Heading down the highway, towards the highway.
Yeah.
So he's got emergency services, he's got the club, he's got RVL, and there are chairmen and CEOs and there's media. Now, that guy has...
And the next race coming up. Yeah.
And making decisions about, well, what do I do? Do I cancel the next race? Do I cancel the meeting? Do I delay them? Do I stop the air balloon from going up again? What do I do? And he just fell into that beautifully, terrifically, because he had some natural leadership abilities. But a lot of people don't understand what's involved in that, and that's the sort of thing we're trying to help them with.
The live baiting, a slur on greyhound racing, a slur on any sport, a slur with animal cruelty, and people have been dealt, harsh disqualifications, and so they should be. There's no room for them in any sport whatsoever. Within the last couple of days, an amazing backflip by the Baird government in New South Wales. A lot of pressure brought to bear. And the backflip is, but it means that the sport can continue, but under very stringent new rulings. What do you see happening here in Victoria? Because I think the minister is to be admired for holding, standing firm and not a knee-jerk reaction. It's basically up to the greyhound industry to clean up their act.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of the way that, that Victoria's approached this. You know, if you look at how we went about it, we had the chief veterinary officer conduct his own independent inquiry looking at the welfare aspects of that, and then myself and my office looking at it from the integrity perspective. And together we came up with 68 recommendations to fix the problems that were in place, to improve things that were in place, and to address these. And I think that's a very responsible approach to take. If we threw everything out that, that wasn't working well, we'd be left with very little, whether it's corporate, whether it's sport. Various sports have had their own problems. Would you stop those sports just because you've had your problems?
No.
At least give this a shot. And I think with the things that are going into place, and they're going very, very quickly to be implemented, we're seeing a lot of great work. And I think that's a very responsible approach that was taken.
Yeah. There's always a syndrome of sort of, from where I sit and watch the three codes, and it's this policy, that's the way we've always done it. That's the way my dad did it. That's the way I was always trained. You know, why try and change us?
Yeah, and you know, the part that I don't understand with that reasoning is there isn't any scientific proof that a dog that has been live baited is going to perform any better than a dog that hasn't. Hmm. I know that the history and the culture was that, you know, using live animals was part of the training of the dogs, and it goes back a long way. But we've moved a hell of a long way too. You know, they'd be like arguing, well, forcing me to wear a seatbelt is a restriction on my own rights. You know, we've gone beyond that. We do that as second nature. We do a lot of things. You walk down, you know, Exhibition Street or Bourke Street when you leave here and have a look at what's going on, and we'll see people walking around the place with ID tags that they use to swipe to get into their offices at work.
Yeah.
Now, years ago, you could say, I'm not going to carry anything around my bloody body and IDs and everything, but we do it. We naturally do it. Times change. We've got to move with the times. And you know, that part of the frustration, I think, with things like discipline is that a lot of discipline has gone. From what perhaps you and I went through, you know, if we played up at school, we get the cuts, you know, six of the best on each hand.
What about the copper on the street who give the kid a boot up the bum
exactly.
And say, get home or I'll tell your parents?
Exactly. And I've been guilty of that. But I look back on that and I think that's probably what was practical and what had effect.
It worked.
Absolutely. Those things are gone now. We're seeing that we've got people in society now that are undisciplined and causing problems that we've got in the streets.
Today, Caulfield Cup Day, are you on duty? Will you go to the races as a racing fan? I know you're a racing fan. What will you be? Will you be watching? What will you be doing?
I'm not going because I can't this week, but two of my guys will be there. Essentially, they'll be walking the tracks. So they might go out with the track walker and have a look at the track to start with. They'll watch the horses arrive and make sure all of that's done properly.
Are they on duty?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. And just so you know and your listeners know, we've got a policy here that we don't bet. There's nothing to stop us legally from betting or through any sort of
regulation. No, it's not
regulation.
Not a good look.
We don't want it. It's not as if we know any better anyway, but we don't bet.
Take a tip from a punter, don't bother.
And they'll be watching what the stewards do. They'll go up into the towers with the stewards. They'll be sitting in the stewards' room watching the inquiries. They'll go out to the vets and they'll go into the swabbing stalls. They'll have a look at the blood samples, the urine samples. They'll be mingling with, talking to trainers and owners. They'll be in the mounting yards. They're just there to have a look at how everything's going and make sure that there's nothing there that they think could be improved or be done better. But to learning, they're learning.
If there's a colourful character that has been warned off, can they identify them and will they escort them off the track? Do they have that or do they call the police to come and do that?
Yeah, no, my guys have got no special powers. We don't have any authorised powers to do that, but we would ask the police to be involved in that.
Outside the job, how did you get involved? What was your background like coming through as a junior? Were you a racing fan? Did you? How did you discover what this world was all about?
No, I didn't. My first memory of racing was my dad, who used to work, ironically, in the building that I work in, which used to be the Southern Cross Hotel.
Yeah, I remember it well.
And he came home one night, and I remember him saying that he'd met a jockey, and the jockey was in the restaurant when he was serving. Dad was a waiter, and he didn't have cash on him, and he asked Dad whether he could borrow $50 off him. And I thought that was kind of weird, because I thought jockeys were really well paid and everything else. And he later told me that it was Roy Higgins.
Oh, dear.
So that's my very first memory attached to racing in any particular way. And you might be pleased to know that he paid him back an extra.
He would. Roy was a champion, yeah.
And then it was attending race meetings, you know, in a social aspect, going to races with mates or going to invited events or tables that we were hosting at in the corporate world and whatever. So I didn't really have a strong relationship with racing. I found it fascinating and exciting and a great social day, and there's something about competitive sport that attracts me, and I've got to know it a lot better now, and I'm continually amazed, you know, from a layman's perspective, to look at an animal that's such a magnificent creature that, you know, weighs around 550, 600 kilos or whatever, and then see someone weighing maybe 50 kilos on top of it, yeah, controlling it in traffic.
Never ceases to amaze me.
It's just, no. And they're beautiful animals. In fact, I shouldn't tell you this, but I was actually afraid of horses. I've been horse riding a few times, and they knew who was the boss, and it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And I sort of didn't have much confidence on top of it, and now I just love them to death. They're just beautiful.
Someone described racing recently, and it's so true, it's the only sport where you're followed by an ambulance.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, I've heard that before.
Sal, in winding up, you're comfortable that racing is in a good position. I portrayed it as being on the nose, and I don't hold back from that, and I think you agree with the perception, and perception can be reality. Are we heading in the right direction?
Yeah, we are. There's more money being spent on integrity than ever before. We're bringing in specialist skills. We're bringing in specialist people to work in racing that we've never done before. We're getting, you know, we do things here like conduct benchmark surveys with other sports, looking to see what they do, what lessons there are, and I consider we're doing as well as anybody.
Is the benchmark globally Hong Kong racing?
It would be, but that's not a... I don't think that's a culture that we can adapt in Australia.
Yeah.
Imagine telling a trainer that they can't have their horses on their property, that they're going to be taken over by, in our case, RVL.
Yeah.
And if they want to access them, they're going to have to go down to RVL and have certain times that they could, you know, trial them or train them. The things that they do with them, everything they do with them is high class, but it's appropriate to that type of culture and that type of racing.
In conclusion, that hotline number for the integrity department.
Yep, 1300 227 225.
We share the same football team.
We do. You know, I can go back a lot further back with Collingwood, because I was born in Collingwood. In that era, as you know, there was no decisions about who you barracked for. That it was a suburb that you lived in, and I was probably a good torpedo away from the ground, so I'd be down there Tuesdays and Thursdays at training, Saturdays for the game, and kind of ironically, when I joined the police force, I was stationed at Collingwood, and my role on a Saturday was to stand behind the away goals. So I gave the visiting team supporters a bit of grief.
Thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to have a chat with you. It's a different racing life, but you've shed a lot of light on who you are and what you do, and I feel a lot more comfortable having had a good chat with you.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.